know you're wrong. Whoa. Niggas always wanna call you, talking about what they need.
What they need.
Know you're wrong. Know you're wrong.
Welcome, everybody, to the F-Ball NFL podcast. I'm your host, Andrea Hanks. I cover the NFL at thecomeback.com, sportsonearth.com, and the Cleveland Browns for scout.com's Orange and Brown Report. I'm joined, like always, by my co-host, Brian.
Welcome back, Andrea.
Welcome back, Brian. We're heading into week 7 of the 2016 NFL season, almost to the halfway point, if you can believe it. I think a lot of teams are already ready to get their seasons over with at this point, given the fact that there are 18 teams, 9 each in the AFC and NFC, that are at or below 500 right now. That is, of course, 18 of 32, more than half. So for all those people out there who are saying maybe perhaps the NFL product is on the decline after a few golden years of games to watch every week, you might be onto something.
Yeah, that's a popular opinion, I'd say. And I don't know. I mean, maybe there is a difference this year. Maybe there's a few more key injuries that are causing certain teams to not play well, or you know, I'm not sure exactly what it is that has everybody feeling that way. To me, it just kind of seems pretty standard, you know. Maybe there are less, like last year there was, you know, a number of teams that were undefeated or one loss at this point, like I think maybe 8 or 9 or something like that.
Yeah, right now there are only 3.
Right. So like maybe that's that perception has something to do with it. I'm not quite sure.
Well, it's also teams that have been pretty strong, if not dominant, over the past couple of years, or at least seem trending upwards, like for example, trending upwards, the case of the New York Jets, or dominant in the sense of the Carolina Panthers, and you see these teams falling off the map. You know, the Arizona Cardinals are you know, kind of struggling to get back to where they were a season and 2 seasons ago and all of that. So I think that we're seeing a lot of teams, Cincinnati Bengals, Baltimore Ravens still struggling, even though they've tried to kind of bounce back from some injuries. More other injuries have been mounting. So you're seeing a lot of teams that were pretty dominant over the last couple of years struggling to reach 500 at this point, you know, almost 7 games in. So, I mean, I think that there's some credence to the fact that this is kind of it's a more meh NFL season, if you will.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like conversely, you know, Atlanta is playing better than they have in years. So, you know
sure.
what I mean? So, like, while Carolina's, just for that microcosm, while Carolina's down for what we've seen this year, you know, Atlanta's up. So, you know, to me as an unbiased party, it, you know, kind of balances out.
For me as an unbiased party, it doesn't balance out because there are, like I said, 18 teams at 500 or worse, and I don't see a lot of that changing miraculously over the course of week 7.
All right, I see my attempts at devil's advocate here are proving unfruitful.
Yes, they are. In fact, teams are already making some moves in order to try to improve their lot. For example, the New York Jets, on a 4-game losing streak, have decided to turn away from Ryan Fitzpatrick as their starting quarterback and back to Geno Smith. Last year, Fitzpatrick, maybe not the most impressive in terms of completion percentage and things like that, but definitely in terms of scoring production, 31 touchdowns to 15 interceptions. At this point, you know, he's thrown 5 touchdowns to 11 interceptions, and turnovers are never a way to win games. And he continues to commit those crucial turnovers, which I think is the main motivating factor here with getting, you know, going back to Geno Smith. As you look at his career numbers, you know, this year, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he's not doing too much different than he did last year in terms of average passing yards per game. Last year, 244. This year, 240. Meanwhile, Geno Smith has a career average of 183.3. And he has thrown more interceptions on his career than touchdowns, 36 to 27. But, you know, you got to make a change. And right now, things are not going so well for Ryan Fitzpatrick. There's been moments where, you know, Brandon Marshall's been dinged up. This latest development with Eric Decker. Now he needs hip surgery before he can get the shoulder surgery. So who knows what his status is even going to be for 2017. That doesn't help things out for Fitzpatrick whatsoever. And I guess we're kind of seeing that, you know, last year was sort of an outlier. I mean, it was absolutely beyond the pale, his best career season ever for a guy that's, you know, bounced around to 7 or 8 different teams. So it didn't seem like something that was sustainable to the tune of 31 touchdowns to 15 interceptions, but it seemed like being productive in that Jets offense was something that he'd be capable of continuing on in 2016 as they bridge toward whatever's next, whether it's Bryce Petty or Christian Hackenberg or something else. But alas, at least for now, we're going to see what Geno Smith can provide the Jets offense, if he can provide that spark that they need. I will say this much, you know, we haven't seen a lot positive play career so far in the career of Geno Smith. There are a lot of Jets beat writers who are pretty excited about what they saw out of him this summer in training camp versus, you know, obviously Ryan Fitzpatrick not being there for most of the time and Smith running with that first team offense. So who knows? Maybe there will be a spark that will, I think it's too late to say that the Jets can completely turn their season around, become playoff contenders or anything like that. But maybe they can stop this slide that they're on.
Yeah, I mean, when I first heard it, I didn't know if they were, you know, I know they pulled Fitzpatrick last week and put in Geno, although I didn't get to see much of that part of the game, and didn't get to see much of Geno playing. So I'm looking forward to seeing how he looks next week. But I don't, you know, I was thinking when I first heard all this that it was just like, okay, he needs to like collect himself. You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's what Todd Bowles basically was saying right after the game. But then once they took a close look at the game tape, they realized no, this
Geno's going to give them the better chance.
Geno's giving them the better chance. So that's what they're believing right now.
Right. So yeah, I mean, I guess it just remains to be seen. We've seen Geno, although it's been a few years since we've seen any sort of extension action.
Yeah, he's only thrown a couple of passes. He only threw a couple of passes last year. We haven't really seen him in action since 2014, when he threw 13 touchdowns to 13 interceptions.
Right, and that was, I think there was, I don't remember who else was there, but I think he was kind of in and out that season. I don't think he played all 16 games, did he? Regardless, my point is that we've seen him. He's never looked great by any stretch, but
he's a young quarterback.
But he was a younger quarterback, and there definitely was room for improvement. Fitzpatrick's been around for the past year and a half, and maybe having that veteran presence around him has helped him mature or take some sort of step in his development. So maybe, you know, obviously the Jets are the ones that are dealing with it in real time every day, and so you kind of have to trust that they have the best idea of who gives them the best shot. So we'll just see how much better of a shot it is to win when we see Geno on Sunday.
You know, and a quarterback change, of course, is no predictor of success. San Francisco 49ers did it last week, brought in Colin Kaepernick to start over Blaine Gabbert, and the Niners still lost against the Buffalo Bills and are now on a 5-game losing streak.
Yeah, that's kind of tough, though, because the Bills have been playing really well.
Well, the Bills have been playing really well.
And you're going on the road to play them with your team that's been struggling as a team.
Right, but if you read the comments of all the Bills defenders after the game, that they were just like, he's shot, Kaepernick doesn't have it anymore, he doesn't have the accuracy or the arm, and we've all figured out what he can do with his legs, and we know how to shut that down. And so, you know, so you have all these Bills defenders basically saying he can't do it anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, San Francisco doesn't have a lot of options right now.
They don't have a lot of options right now. And I think you can say that about a lot of teams, considering, as I said, 18 of 32 are at 500 or below. Another team that has quarterback issues, not because of anything that's happened on the field in terms of performance, but rather injury, of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Ben Roethlisberger suffering what ended up being a torn meniscus in the second quarter of his team's road loss last week to the Miami Dolphins. He's going to be sidelined. He wants it to be 2 weeks. The Steelers take on the New England Patriots this week, then go on bye, and then come back against the Baltimore Ravens. And that's when Roethlisberger's kind of gunning for. But his doctor has told him that because of his injury history, there was still some stuff, I think was the technical term Roethlisberger used on Monday to describe it. Some stuff still going on in that knee from the bone bruise, the significant bone bruise he suffered in that knee last season. That cost him, is the technical term.
There's some stuff.
There's some stuff in there from the bone bruise he suffered against the Rams last year that cost him 4 games. Steelers went 2-2 in that stretch. So it could be as few as two, but as many as six. It's probably somewhere in the 3 to 4 week range, and that's not good news for the Pittsburgh Steelers. You know, they've really been struggling on the road. The last 16 games, they're 5-11 on the road against sub 500 teams that are at or sub 500. And after the Patriots and after the bye week, two of those next three games are on the road against sub 500 teams: the Baltimore Ravens, and then 2 weeks after that, the Indianapolis Colts. So when you break down those numbers, even with Roethlisberger, it could be really difficult for the Steelers to get those road wins. And you know, then you have all the other issues that they have on defense. Cameron Hayward is going to be out at least two after the bye week with his injury. There's linebacker Ryan Shazier dealing with a knee. Safety Mike Mitchell is also dealing with a knee. There's some sort of undisclosed issue with Stephon Tuitt, so we don't know how much time he's going to miss, the other outstanding defensive end. So you put all of those issues together, and, you know, this is a Steelers team that's 4-2 right now. Basically have very little chance, in my opinion, even at home on Sunday against the New England Patriots with Landry Jones under center and that defense on the field. And then they go into their bye week hoping to get healthy, but then after that it's not pretty when the Steelers are doing the things that they do on the road against teams that they should beat, and two of their next three games after the bye are games like that.
I'm less concerned with that given this current situation. I'm concerned with the injuries, because that's especially with the way like Cameron Hayward had been playing and things like that. So, you know, missing guys that have stepped up and made contributions
starters
this year.
Defense.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, that's tough. And hopefully, you know, between next week and the bye week, you know, they can get him back or at least some of the other guys that they're down right now. I'd be less concerned about them playing down to opponents, playing down to bad opponents, when they're missing Ben. And that's the thing. In order for the team to have a collective letdown, it's like you got to have that all there, and then you're just kind of like coasting. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, but here's the thing.
When you're down your main guy, and that, I'm saying, like, that's a galvanizing thing for your team, I think.
It can be, but it hasn't been. It hasn't been for the Mike Tomlin-led Steelers on a regular basis at all, ever.
Well, I will point out last year,
they did go 2-2 during the
Was it Denver that came? Somebody came to Pittsburgh last year when they were without Ben. I think Mike Vick might have been. Either Mike Vick or Landry Jones was the quarterback at the time.
Right.
And everybody said, oh, well, this team's too good, and then they beat him. And so, I think it was Denver, if I can't.
Right, but the other thing that you have to consider is that last year that was a healthier defense.
True.
They had a pass rush. The Steelers don't have a pass rush this year. They have only 8 sacks on the season. They only have 3 takeaways interception-wise on defense. You know, they're allowing an incredible amount of passing yardage. They're now allowing an incredible amount of rushing yardage. So this isn't the same defense either that Denver Broncos team came to town and saw in 2015.
Yeah,
even when they're healthy.
Well, like I said, I'm just a little bit more concerned about the injuries at this point. So, I think that they should be able to, assuming it's 3 or 4 weeks. You know, I don't think they're necessarily going to go 0-for the whole time. You know what I mean? I think that they should be able to get a winner or two out of that.
They should
kinda
be.
Like
they should be
year.
Able to, but I think this is a major setback for them.
Sure.
When you're talking about a post bye week stretch that even with a healthy Roethlisberger statistically wasn't really in their favor.
No.
And obviously not in their favor this week with the Patriots, the
5-1
Patriots
coming
to town.
That's definitely true.
Another quarterback development to report is the Dallas Cowboys. Everybody kind of thought that after the Cowboys had their Week 7 bye, which of course is this week, that they would start thinking about, okay, do we bring Tony Romo back in Week 8? He's coming along nicely in his rehabilitation from the back injury. But no, they're going to give it more time, all the time it needs, perhaps 16, 17 weeks worth of time. Dak Prescott is going to remain the starter in Week 8 after the bye. You know, Dak's doing really well. I mean, if it's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Well, I mean,
and plus you've got Ezekiel Elliott out there, the best running back in the league.
That's the point, is that the team's playing so well right now with these two rookies leading the offense.
Yeah, why snap that chemistry? Why snap that
streak?
Why
throw Tony Romo back in there and potentially have him get hurt again? And because that's We saw this last year. He got hurt and came back, and it was probably rushed, and then he got hurt again.
Yeah, he got hurt.
Within a couple weeks.
Was it
the same game?
It was Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I remember he got hurt on Thanksgiving.
That was his first game back.
That's exactly my point. It's you know, why even mess with the chemistry to throw in a guy who has not proven to be able to stay on the field for many years now? You know what I mean? And to mess up what's going, just it really doesn't make any sense.
You might as well not screw up team chemistry that's working right now, especially when you have a situation where Dez Bryant's been out a couple of weeks. He's got a knee thing that he's dealing with. He also cut his hand opening a can of soup.
Oh,
apparently
rough.
but the other thing too is that the importance of Dez Bryant on that offense. What we've learned these weeks without Tony Romo is that it's a Dez Bryant Tony Romo connection. It's not so much a Dak Prescott Dez Bryant connection. And not having Dez on the field while having Dak under center hasn't hurt the Cowboys
team
at all. It hasn't hurt the team or the offense at all. And it could actually have a negative effect if you're dealing with a Romo without Dez situation.
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah, that's I don't know. They're definitely one of the surprises of the season, I'd say, because we thought they'd be a strong team. Then they lost Romo, and it's like, well, Dak looked good. I mean, how good can they be here? And it's just like, oh,
they
look
very quite.
They're going to be every bit as good as we kind of thought they could be. So
especially, you know, you have Dak only throwing one interception so far this season, and then you have Ezekiel Elliott. He already has 703 rushing yards. Mm-hmm. He's averaging 117.2 rush yards per game. He has 5 touchdowns rushing, and then we're 6 games in, and they're on a bye week. He's had 703 yards in 6 games rushing. He might be the most impactful, by the time the season's over, the most impactful rookie, I know that's not a word, the most high-impact rookie running back of all time. He might really have one of the most, like, high-impact, best rookie running back seasons, if not the best, ever.
Potentially.
Which is insanity.
Potentially, but that's the thing, is when you combine a player with that much skill with a team that's got an offensive line that's built like that.
Yeah, I mean Dak's been very well protected.
Not to, you know, I don't want to take anything away from Zeke. He's good. You know, obviously he's good.
He's very
good. Like, you know, it's definitely he's in about as good a situation as he could have walked into in the NFL, and we're seeing what's happening.
absolutely, and you know, it's sort of like DeMarco. Who? I mean, like last year, it was like, okay, maybe Dallas. I mean, obviously they didn't have the financial resources to be able to pay Romo and Dez and DeMarco Murray, but then you looked at the run game last year and said, yeah, this O-line's still good, and the run game has potential, but, man, if they had DeMarco Murray. But now it's just like, okay, they have Zeke.
But that's what I'm saying. So when you combine a talented running back with that line, you're going to get wild success. And,
yes.
And so we saw that a couple years ago when DeMarco was there, and we saw it, you know, we see it this year with Zeke. So it's fun to watch, that's for sure, unless you hate the Cowboys.
Which I know that there are millions of people in this country who do, because there's no – just as there is a longstanding tradition of loving the Cowboys in this – in at least the United States, there's also a similarly longstanding tradition of hating them.
Well, you can only refer to yourself as America's team for so long before everybody else gets just, okay, come on.
Exactly. The other player making headlines this week is, of course – Cincinnati Bengals linebacker Vontaze Burfict. He's just a few games back from his 3-game suspension to start the season, but he's already causing controversy, having been fined $75,000 for unnecessary roughness after a stomp on New England Patriots running back LeGarrette Blount over the weekend. You know, so he's already lost over $500,000 because of his 3-game suspension. So this is another $75,000. He's also had fines before of almost $70,000, another $25,000, another $21,000 in 3 different incidents previously. You know, Marvin Lewis, the Bengals head coach, didn't believe that Burfict did anything wrong in this case and thinks that he's just being fined for his reputation. But if you look really closely at the play, it does look a little bit shady. I mean, if you look at things that – let's talk Ndamukong Suh.
You're going to talk about stomping people.
You better bring up Ndamukong Suh. You know, and it's not what was that a few years ago when, like, Albert Haynesworth really stepped on his face?
Yeah.
Like, that's not what Suh was really doing. That's not what Burfict was doing here. It wasn't anything to that extent. But it is an example of how you know, Burfict has had trouble with self-control and discipline and violence on the field. You know, that's why he got the three-game suspension to start the season. And it, to me, it just bothers me because I do think that there is a level of Burfict's play that is dirty. I can't say that he's flat-out a dirty player because I don't think he goes out there every week with the mentality of, like, you know,
trying to cheat.
I'm trying to cheat, or I'm trying to be really shady
or
for my team,
people.
Or hurt people intentionally to get ahead. But when you're in the heat of the moment, he often makes the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's the reason why he went
self-control
undrafted.
Self-control issues.
It's self-control issues, and that's the reason why he went undrafted. It had nothing to do with, you know, DUI arrests or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was not off the field at all. It ended up being on the field and just being too aggressive, and I think that he still has that problem. I think that he's done a better job of keeping it in check, and I think Marvin Lewis has done a good job of trying to keep an eye on him and keep him, you know, as corralled as he can. But Burfict's just this kind of dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this as somebody, I'm a fan. I like him.
Mm-hmm.
I like watching him on the field. He makes a vast difference, and you could see it between...
You don't like to see him do that kind of stuff.
I just
though.
Don't like seeing him do that kind of stuff, and I don't understand why there needs to be this kind of controversy where, like, if you call him dirty, you don't think he's talented, or if you're a Bengals fan, you can't understand where he's done things that are wrong, or if you can't
right.
find him, you can't find him talented and a screw up at the same time.
No, I mean, Sue's a very good comparison because
sure.
he's again. I mean, outside of the – he had, like, a DUI or ran off the road or something like that. Outside of that, like, any issues that people have had about Ngamankan Su has been, like, on-field stuff
sure.
where he loses his cool.
Yeah.
But he's obviously a very talented player. So
yes.
it's very similar in that respect, although, you know, I don't know if Vontez is quite looked at by the league as being the – quite as elite as Sue is, at least comparative to his position. You know what I mean?
Right, right. I mean, I would say he's pretty up there.
Oh, he's definitely up there.
On his position that he plays. But I just think that, like, you don't need to be in denial. There are probably situations. There are probably, because of his history of drawing, you know, penalties and fines, that there have probably been instances where Vontez Burfict has drawn an unwarranted flag or been fined even more than he should have for something that he did. Because we saw it with James Harrison. We see it with James Harrison with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We see how many times that Ndamukong Suh, especially when
mm-hmm.
he was with the Detroit Lions, has been flagged and fined. And not all of those are going to be warranted, because once the league has their eye on you, they're keeping their eye on you, and sometimes you just get fabric thrown for something that you didn't do.
Right.
And I understand that. I understand what Marvin Lewis is saying there. But at the same time, he totally did stomp on LeGarrette Blount.
He deserved a flag.
He
probably deserved a fine.
He deserved a fine.
The
he
question,
didn't get a suspension.
But Marvin Lewis is exactly right about it, the fact that it would have been $75,000 if it wasn't for Vontez Burfict.
No,
absolutely.
But his baseline fine numbers are going to keep going up. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they went up from 21 to 25 to $69,000 for multiple infractions in that Steelers game last year.
Mm-hmm.
So his price tag of fines is just going to go up, even if what he did to get this fine was less egregious than something that he did 2 years ago or a year ago to get a lower fine.
Yeah, right.
Because that's just sort of how it works in the NFL. And there is an arbitrary nature to it. And I do agree that they're going to keep – they have been keeping and will continue to keep a closer eye on Burfict and hold him to a more accountable or a more thin margin of error standard
mm-hmm.
than a lot of other players. Same with James Harrison and same with Ndamukong Suh. But, you know – You can say that he's made dirty plays and not be anti-Bengals, conspiring against the Bengals, or anti-Burfict. And that's like the main point I want to make, is that it's not an either-or.
Yeah.
It's just like, here is the story of Vontez Burfict, just like here is the story of James Harrison. Here's
mm-hmm.
the story of Ndamukong Suh. And, you know, look at Suh in Miami now. I mean, he's still playing at a very high level and has calmed that behavior down. And it's just a matter of maturing and getting older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Burfict's still a fairly young player. He'll get over this. Either he'll get over it because he's going to be sick of losing money to fines, or he'll get over it because he figures a different way to channel his emotions, or he won't get over it. We'll see. Whatever. But my whole point is that you have to take a holistic look at it. It's not just he's dirty and has no place in the game. when he's being intentionally dirty, that has no place in the game, and he should be punished for it, which he has been.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
But he's also a good football player. When he plays well, why not acknowledge it?
Right, and he obviously needs to understand, and until he can play an extended period of time with no issues, that he's going to be under more intense scrutiny than your average Joe.
And and I agree that there's a level of unfairness there, but it's also, at least it's one place where the NFL is sort of consistent with discipline. It's like, oh, okay, now if you've gotten a bunch of penalties and fines, okay, we'll keep an eye on you. At least they're being consistent with those guys.
Yeah,
But they're in a nice arbitrary manner.
Right, it's still arbitrary, but
yeah.
Sure.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast, and we'll be right back with our Week 7 Minute Picks. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Say words, gain express what you do for me when you appear. And don't be blind to see my love is the part you shouldn't feel. Say words, gain express what you do for me when you appear.
And we have returned here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast just in time for Minute Picks for Week 7. Two teams on their byes this week, the Dallas Cowboys and the Carolina Panthers, both who could use some time off for very different reasons. We start with Thursday night's matchup in the NFC North. Chicago Bears are at the Green Bay Packers. Green Bay Packers reeling on offense right now. A number of factors going into that. We're not going to go into that at the moment. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. We'll see what happens in this game. But the other situation is the massive amount of injuries, the injury report right now, and a number of guys who are out for both the Bears and the Packers on Thursday night is astounding. Who knows if they'll be able to dress 45, 46 guys. That being said, you know, with what happened last week with the Packers getting trounced and Chicago being a team that I just cannot believe in, and then on the road, and then short week, and then injuries, I'm going Packers.
Yeah, the first thought I had when I saw this matchup was yuck. And second was, this isn't going to help the ratings numbers at all.
No, this is not going to help.
There's two, you know, Chicago's not playing, certainly not playing their best ball right now. And Green Bay has been kind of looking worse and worse each week, it seems like. And then on top of that, there's all these injuries. So doesn't sound like a fun way to start off the season, the week. But you know, they got to have some game on Thursday, I suppose. So they're putting those two teams on the field. I'll take Green Bay just because they're at home, and you know, Rodgers against the Bears. But I don't know, the way Rodgers look lately, who knows?
Moving on to Sunday, the New York Giants. They are in England, in Twickenham Stadium, London.
Yeah, it's the first game in Twickenham.
First game in Twickenham. Both teams, the LA Rams and the New York Giants, 3-3 right now. You know, the New York Giants have looked a little bit sharper on offense this season than they did a year ago, though still questions remain on the offensive line as always. Los Angeles, meanwhile, hard team to pin down. You know, we're not seeing the same kind of tough running from Todd Gurley as we were coming into the season expecting. Case Keenum, though, still having that starting job locked down at quarterback. I'm really curious to see what goes on here. Obviously, both these teams are 3-3. They're, you know, trying to get above 500. They're doing so in England. I have no reason to actually have no reason to do this, but I'm just going to go with the Rams.
Well, we.
This is hard to say. There's two 3-3 teams like with question marks on the road in England. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and you know, both of them we've kind of seen different sorts of performances out of them this year.
Yep.
I'd say that I'm gonna go with you and agree that I think I like the Rams here a little bit more. I think their defense is a little stouter, and I like how that passing game has been looking more and more efficient, I think, over the last couple of weeks. You know, the Giants, it's just kind of, you know, tough to tell what you're going to get on a weekly basis. That Odell looked really good last week, and you know, maybe that's enough to put him over in this game. But you know, we'll have to see. Twittenham it is.
Back in the States, got the New Orleans Saints at the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, I'm going to go with the Chiefs here. I'm not going to sit here and say every week that it's going to be a shootout when it comes to the New Orleans Saints doing anything. You know, there's been times where the Kansas City passing game has been pretty efficient, or pretty explosive, but basically they've been more efficient than anything. You know, they've got their 3-2 record, but only a point differential plus 7. So it could be a situation where the Saints come in and win, but I just don't trust the Saints on the road because I just don't trust the Saints in general. I don't trust them at home. I don't trust them on the road. I don't trust that defense. And so I'm going to go with the Chiefs. It's a tough place to play in Arrowhead, and I think that the Chiefs will win.
Yeah, I think Kansas City's just tough draw here. They're definitely good at home. They're definitely a good defense. We saw them go to Oakland last week in kind of a messy, sloppy game with the rain and all that, and the defense just really did a good job to lock down that Oakland offense, who'd looked really good and so far this year. And I think at home against another good offense, I think Kansas City should be able to expect them to play well and get the job done.
Indianapolis Colts are at the Tennessee Titans in what's sure to be an electrifying AFC South matchup. Tennessee got another win, though. They got a win last week against the visiting Cleveland Browns. I don't think they're going to do it this week against the Indianapolis Colts, even though there's so little that I trust about the Colts, and everybody knows about my rantings about how that team has sort of failed to deliver around Andrew Luck. But I think when you just put these head-to-head, I'm going to go with the Colts getting a road win here. I don't know why. I don't know. I don't trust either of these teams, to be quite honest with you. I mean, Indianapolis hasn't won yet on the road this year, which is a problem, but maybe they'll get it here. I mean, if they're going to get a road win at this point, I would guess that Tennessee would be a candidate for it, right?
Yeah, I mean, historically, you got to look at, Indy's record in the division. They've played really well against all those teams over the years.
But this is a different situation.
Houston's been probably their closest competitor in all those. But that being said, this is a little bit different Colt situation. And, Titans have looked better over the last couple weeks.
I mean, if the Titans can really commit to the run game here and do that
it's
thing.
It's not like you can't run on Indy.
You can absolutely run on Indy. So if the Titans do commit to that run game here and stick with it, even if it doesn't start working at the beginning of the game, as long as they don't find themselves too far behind, I think Tennessee could just grind them into the ground. So there's that to consider.
Yeah, I mean, for my official prediction, I'll take Tennessee here. But, I think... I've seen them almost lose games that they shouldn't almost lose and things like that. Like they almost lost last week. I could see something like that happening here. I guess especially against comeback wizard like Andrew Luck and his cohorts.
Next up, the undefeated Minnesota Vikings travel to Philadelphia to take on the 3-2 Eagles. Oh, what a difference a few weeks make. I mean, at the beginning of the season, it looked like Carson Wentz was going to be the big mm-hmm. quarterback, the rookie quarterback sensation, the big savior for the Eagles. The Eagles' defense running that wide nine again and getting some pressure and some stops on opposing offenses, but it hasn't really gone that same way consistently since. Meanwhile, the Vikings, given all of their injuries, all of the things that they've been through, have remained the paragons of consistency. They keep churning out wins. They do it at home. They do it on the road. They're just coming off of a bye week. They're still motivated. There's still people doubting their ability to be able to accomplish this. Sam Bradford making his return to Philadelphia. That Minnesota defense had a nice week to rest and get ready for a rookie quarterback. I'm going to go with the Vikings.
Yeah, I like the Vikings here. Philly definitely has fallen off a little bit the last couple weeks. We've seen the rookie come back to earth. That defense is still very opportunistic, but I don't know how good they are at just like flat out stopping people. They're good at causing some disruption, but otherwise, I don't know. But the Minnesota, they're definitely playing really well. Coming off a bye, they're a well coached team. I like them in this situation.
Next, we go to the AFC North, where the Cleveland Browns at 0-6 travel to the 2-4, the surprisingly 2-4 Cincinnati Bengals. Mm-hmm. I think the Bengals will pick up a win here. I don't think it's going to be that difficult. You've got a rookie quarterback coming in, and Cody Kessler against a really difficult to play against Cincinnati defensive front. you know, you got Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, you know, anchoring that front. You got obviously you've got the vicious Vontaze Burfict, who's going to make things difficult for Gary Barnage and company in the middle of the field, to be certain. And of course, you know, Andy Dalton, he's still trying to get his footing with his new receiving core. But I think that, you know, having that home advantage, having that defense, you know, staring down this 2-4 record with a winless team coming in, gives them ample opportunity to get another victory. So I'm going with the Bengals.
Yeah, I think Bengals really need this. It's a divisional win. They're already behind on the season as far as their expectations.
Right, and they're looking at a situation where injuries are piling up for Baltimore, and Roethlisberger's out for who knows how long. So Cincinnati is an opportunity zone.
Right, and I'd give Cleveland a chance here because I like their spirit. They haven't won any games, but I like their spirit. I feel like they keep coming out and fighting every week despite all this ridiculous amount of injuries, and there's the quarterbacks can't stay in for a whole game and all that. That spirit's been nice, but I'd give them maybe a chance at home, but not in Cincinnati.
Washington is at the Detroit Lions. Fun fact, leading quarterback in the league right now is Matthew Stafford. meanwhile, Washington is becoming a difficult team for me to pin down. They're 4-2, 2-0 on the road, 2-2 at home. But, you know, they're difficult to pin down because some weeks, you know, Kirk Cousins looks quite good. Other weeks, Kirk Cousins looks quite bad, quite inconsistent. Sometimes that defense can really step up and make plays, and sometimes they fall flat on their faces. I think that obviously Detroit having that home field advantage benefits them, you know, and it tips the scales to a more inconsistent performance out of Washington. But yet with the Lions, you don't know either. I am going to go with home field just because Detroit has been surprisingly more consistent in a positive way this year than I had anticipated, and Washington has been more inconsistent. But I'm going to go with the Lions, but again, Washington hasn't lost on the road yet this year.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is we'll have to see if they can keep that up with this road winning streak that they've put together. Also, their four-game winning streak in general, after losing the first two games of the season. So, you know, Washington's got plenty to deal with. And you're right, Cousins has been inconsistent, but certainly so have the Lions. The Lions have trademarked inconsistency. So I'll say that I think there's probably going to be some points in this. Both these offenses can get going a little bit. I'm going with Washington mainly just because, and I said this last week about the Lions not winning two games in a row, but I really don't think they're going to win three in a row. So I'll go with Washington here.
Another team that's undefeated on the road is on the road again this week. That's the Oakland Raiders. They're at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, they're 4-2 and tied with the Denver Broncos for the lead in the AFC West. Again, 1-2 at home, though, but 3-0 on the road. You know, Oakland had that loss last week. I think that they go to Jacksonville and get it done this week and bounce back. I could see a shootout situation just because Oakland's defense has not been performing exactly how I expected this year. Neither has Jacksonville's, to be quite honest, but both have pretty powerful capacity at offense. But I think Oakland gets the win. They're 3-0 on the road. If they get this win, you know, they could potentially be up in the division, and or at least remain right there in the conversation with the Denver Broncos. So I am going to go with the Raiders, the potentially soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders.
Well, I think it's less and less potential every day, it seems like.
Goodell's fighting.
I definitely think that Oakland should be, you know, trying to bounce back after a tough loss last week at home. You know, they've won on the road in tougher places to play than Jacksonville already this year. And so they should be able to go in there and take care of things. It's really the only thing that would have me question that is, you know, can Bortles get right against this Oakland secondary? And, you know, this could just turn into a shootout, and who knows. But I'll take Oakland, I guess.
Buffalo Bills are at the Miami Dolphins. Miami got a home win last week against the Pittsburgh Steelers, a much needed win in general, marking their second on the year. Buffalo, meanwhile, they're on a tear right now, and while they're probably not going to come close to you know, defeating the New England Patriots for tops in the division. They've got a four-game win streak of their own. I think I like Buffalo on the road here. I don't think Miami can pull off that second win in a row. What happened last week was a combination of the Steelers doing that patented thing they do, plus Roethlisberger getting hurt in the second quarter. Buffalo is playing more even-keeled football right now. I know I'm picking a lot of road teams, but it's week seven, and who knows? I'm going with the Bills.
Yeah, I'm taking a handful of road teams this week, too. I like Buffalo here as well. I just feel like they're playing a little bit better. Tyrod's playing really well. Miami's been far from consistent this year, or if anything, far from consistently good this year.
They only have two wins.
I was going to say, if they've been consistent, it's been consistently
lost,
bad.
Yeah.
But the one thing that, you know, Jay Ajayi last week went off for 200 yards, and part of that was that banged-up Pittsburgh defense. But I think part of that is that he's kind of coming into his own, and Miami's starting to rely on him and find a place for him, or it's starting to work out, at least as far as that's concerned. I don't think he's going to have as much success Sunday against the Bills front. That D is certainly playing a lot better than they were earlier this season. And just overall, I think the Bills are playing better football right now, so I'll take them.
Baltimore Ravens are at the New York Jets. Jets, of course, trying to snap that four-game losing streak by putting in Geno Smith at quarterback, replacing Ryan Fitzpatrick. I don't really know what to think about this game because, A, we're talking about Geno Smith, you know. We're talking about, you know, a Baltimore Ravens team that's 3-3 and has done pretty well on the road this season, but it's just lost three games in a row. Obviously, we've got no Eric Decker for the Jets out there, so it's gonna kind of, you know, Brandon Marshall on his own, working with a quarterback with whom he's is familiar, but obviously not as familiar with as he has been with Fitzpatrick. I think this could go either way. I mean, both these teams obviously need to snap these losing streaks, but I'm gonna go with the Jets getting a spark out of the return of Geno Smith, combined with the Baltimore Ravens not being prepared game plan wise for a guy who hasn't really taken significant snaps since 2014. So I'm going to go with the home team and the Jets.
Yeah, this one's a big shoulder shrug for me as well. I don't know. I think that more, I kind of feel like the Jets issues are a little bit more than just Fitzpatrick throwing picks, and that maybe throwing Geno in there is not necessarily going to fix anything. I'm not sure. I don't know. This is tough to say. Baltimore, I think Baltimore can play anywhere and give them. Baltimore just wants to be in a game at the end of the game every week. They need it to be close. It doesn't matter who they're playing.
Yeah. That's what happened to them last year, but they end up losing most of them.
Right.
And they're heading towards that path
well,
again this year.
Well, this year
right?
They've won half of them. So I'll take Baltimore here. Not exactly sure why, mainly just because I think the Jets are reeling a little bit more. Potentially this Geno Smith insertion is something that sparks the Jets and they can start playing better as a team. I'm not betting on that this week.
Our late afternoon slate begins with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at the San Francisco 49ers. Colin Kaepernick making his second start of the season for the Niners. The first attempt at that did not work last week at the Buffalo Bills, which is admittedly a difficult team to play. Quarterback switch or no quarterback switch, especially if you're on the road, given what they can do both on offense and defense. I think it'll be a much easier go of things playing host to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think this will be a bounce back week. I think this will be a good week for Colin Kaepernick. I think this will be a way for the Niners to develop a little bit of much needed confidence, you know, given the fact that they've lost their last five in a row. I like Kaepernick, getting his first start at home in quite some time. So I'm going to go with the 49ers.
Well, what is undeniable is that this is a much more traversable situation for Colin Kaepernick this week.
Yes,
rather
absolutely.
Than being on the
last
road against the Bills.
Last week was going to be difficult, whether
regardless.
Yeah,
and so he gets to Tampa at home. I'm not quite as confident as you sounded saying that, in that he'll look better and do all that stuff. I think it's possible. I'm kind of expecting him to be better, but I'm not super confident in it. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And but you know, Tampa, it's hard to say. They're an interesting team. They do some things well, and winning is not necessarily one of them.
Vincent Jackson, by the way, landing on injured reserve this week, so that drops
out,
a weapon
yeah.
out of their offense.
So that definitely downgrades them a bit.
But he's also been mostly a non-factor this year and last year. So
right, and I think they're getting Doug Martin back.
No, they are not. He had a setback with his hamstring, and actually he might miss the rest of the season, depending on how significant the setback.
Since I read it, so well, regardless, I think I like San Francisco here. I think these are both not very good teams. I'll go with the home team against the East Coast team going all the way west, and that's as much reasoning as I feel I need to give.
The San Diego Chargers are at the Atlanta Falcons. Both of these teams, of course, very intriguing. Atlanta outperforming expectations, but they did that to begin last season. This streak of success has lasted a lot longer. Seems a little bit more sustainable. Meanwhile, San Diego, they've been surprising me this year, particularly not on offense, because you know what to expect sort of out of Phillip Rivers and what kind of quarterback he's capable of being, but out of that defense. And that's going to, I think, going to be something really interesting to see in this game. Because I'm not worried about San Diego having to go to the East Coast when you're talking about a 3:05 or 4:05 p.m. Eastern time kind of game. I think this is a battle of legitimacy. Which team is the most legit? Do we have contendership legitimacy stuff to talk about with San Diego and with Atlanta? Is this, you know, what is the second half of the season going to bring for these guys? I think that San Diego is going to look competent. I think they've built a lot of confidence over the first part of the season, and like I said, particularly on defense. Atlanta's playing with a lot of confidence too, but I'm going to go ultimately with the Falcons getting it just because of that home field advantage. I think it's just going to tip the scales enough in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like the Falcons are just a little bit more complete of a team at this point. I feel like their defense has taken a step since the first couple weeks, and maybe Dan Quinn's effect is settling in finally. And he's finally, you know, getting things into shape for what he's been looking for there. Plus, their offense has been lights out. Matt Ryan, Julio has been really tough to deal with, and that's going to definitely test that San Diego defense. I think San Diego should look respectable in this game, but you know, I expect Atlanta to win.
And finally, for the late afternoon group on Sunday, New England and the 5-1 Patriots go to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who, of course, are without Ben Roethlisberger and a few other key players on defense as well. All of that not adding up to me for a good day for the Steelers, which is unfortunate for them, considering that pretty embarrassing 30-15 loss at Miami last week. New England's just—I think New England would be tough to stop here, even with a healthy Roethlisberger, a healthy Cam Hayward, a healthy Stephon Tuitt, a healthy Ryan Shazier, just because of the way they've been playing. Obviously, all those guys being out there would give the Steelers a much better chance, especially given that this game's at Heinz Field. But, you know, with these circumstances, considering the circumstances, you got to go with the Patriots.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I definitely would have thought a lot harder about this had Ben been in there. And, you know, you weren't dealing with that whole aspect of this, looking at this game. You know, without him, it's just going to be a limited offense, and you know they're going against the team that's playing the best right now. I mean, this one just looks like New England for a lot of reasons.
Finally, on Sunday, we got Sunday Night Football. Seattle Seahawks travel and are on the road against the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona, you know, they've built up their own little win streak of their own, two games. Seattle on a 3-game win streak. But Arizona, they need this win if they want to stay relevant in the NFC West. I mean, Seattle gets this win, they'll be at 5-1 and basically in the driver's seat in the division, given everybody else's numbers at this point. I think it's going to be a really tough game. Basically, anytime you see the NFC West play each other, you never really know what to expect. Mm-hmm. They're all very well-suited teams that are well-scouted and well-built to play one another. You know, this is the kind of game where Seattle could absolutely come in and win. And this is the kind of game that Arizona could be at home and dominate. I'm going to go with the latter. I think that Arizona knows what they're up against. Their backs are kind of against the wall in the win-loss column right now in the division. They're going to definitely be fired up for this game. And so I think I like Arizona. I think it might be a fairly dominant win for the Cardinals.
Oh, wow. Do you think they're going to win in dominating form?
I do.
Interesting. I disagree. I think that the issues I've seen with this Arizona team this year are starting to feel more and more real each week. And, I mean, Carson Palmer's back in there, but he doesn't look like he did last year. And
he's a year older, man.
Well, I get that. But, you know, So is Tom Brady, and he doesn't look.
He had the first four weeks off.
True. He got a nice break at first.
Yes.
But still.
He had a nice Italian vacation instead of getting sacked and getting a concussion like Carson Palmer did.
Well, regardless, I feel like Arizona is basically a one-man show in David Johnson right now. I don't think that their defense looks as good as it used to or as it did last year. I don't know what the issue is exactly there. I'd need to look into this a little further, I guess. But I don't know. Seattle's playing really well right now. And that offense has started to incorporate Jimmy Graham into what they're doing.
Which is all good news. I mean, the passing game has gotten really sharp for Seattle, which is great because you know that Russell Wilson's knee and ankle are still not 100%.
Right, and you know the running game hasn't exactly slacked off. With like Kristen Michael has finally come around for you know all those people that drafted him in their dynasty leagues years ago and have been pounding their fists on the table, wondering when he's going to do something, and he finally looks good this year. And I think Rawls might be coming back soon too. But regardless, I just feel like Seattle is just playing a lot better right now. This is a huge divisional game. Obviously, Arizona's at home and they're going to be fired up. It's a night game and all that. I just feel like Seattle's playing too well right now for this.
And to close out our minute picks, that's Monday Night Football. The Houston Texans at 4-2 are at the Denver Broncos, who are also 4-2. Yes, that's right. Brock Osweiler returns to his former home only to get sacked by Von Miller, something he's yet to experience. I'm going to go with the Denver Broncos here. I like them at home. I like that they know who's coming to town. They know that Brock's coming to town. And, you know, even though the Texans are 4-2, you know, all of those wins have come at home. They've lost both their games on the road. And Osweiler hasn't really been necessarily the reason for them winning. I mean, a lot of the passing production, particularly DeAndre Hopkins, is down. You know, and some of that is targets being taken away by Will Fuller, but it's still not having that same level of production, the level of production that they were hoping to get out of their passing game with Brock Osweiler. I think they come to Denver and they get beat up, especially because Denver's you know suffered some frustrating losses as of late, and they might as well rebound at home on Monday night.
Well, that was my first thought when I looked at this is Denver's still a good team. Their defense is still lights out.
Absolutely. It's a very good defense.
Their offense has had a couple issues the last couple of weeks, but it should be capable at most of the time throughout the season. They're coming off two losses in a row. One was a tough game at home that they just lost to Atlanta a couple of weeks ago. And then last week, you just felt – I didn't expect this, and in hindsight, I should have. But with them missing Kubiak last week, it seemed like it was like not just a schematic, but like an emotional thing for the team that they were just kind of flat. And I think coming off of that, going home,
it's one thing to adapt to a new coach when you have an entire off season of preparedness, mm-hmm. and it's another thing. I mean, granted, we're talking about an established special teams coach, a guy who works with all of these players, but at the same time, he's now in this greater leadership role within you know just a few days' time.
Well, sure, and I'm not necessarily trying to say anything about him as much as just the team is just like. You know, Kubiak's not here, and it's not quite the same, and they're just kind of flat because of it. Yeah, because they just looked out of sorts that whole game. So I think coming off of that, especially after the losing the week before too, going home, you get Brock Osweiler coming in your house, and he's the guy that basically spurned you to get more money in Houston, and I'm sure everybody's going to be thinking about that. Plus, Osweiler has played his worst ball when facing a lot of pressure, and that's exactly what Denver does.
Yep.
So this just doesn't spell good anything for the Texans, in my mind.
Well, that wraps up our Week 7 picks. As always, burn them.
No, I don't think you should burn them this week.
No,
I think
you should
frame them.
Frame them and then burn them.
And then burn them.
And then burn them. Take the let the frame go with it. No one wants that picture frame anyway.
That'll help it go up faster, at least.
Well, the glass won't. All right. Well, that about does it for this week's episode. We're gonna take a quick break and we'll send you on home. So stick with us. Just a few more minutes.
Plasma my TV screen. Hope I go out like BB King. The front row they cheer for God. I'm sold out on everything. Last night it was a dream. Thinking about you in the worst ways. I need your cake like it's your birthday. I'm trying to be in front of time base. And bless you rockin' with the big dog. I need my bread like it's the fifth floor.
And I guess that's a wrap for this week's episode of the F-Ball NFL Podcast. Heading into week 7 already of the 2016 season. Almost the halfway point.
God, it hardly feels like it.
Well, let's hope the second half of the season is far more electrifying and compelling.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be fine by the end of the season. Teams will start playing better. The playoff races will be more interesting. All that stuff, and then everybody can chill out.
Yeah, until we get to the point in the playoffs where, like, half the teams are 8-8. Well, until we get to the point where half the teams are 8-8, and until we get to week 8 of this season, I'm your host here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast. My name is Andrea Hengst. I cover the NFL at thecomeback.com, sportsonearth.com, and scout.com's Orange and Brown Report, and you can find me on the Twitter machine at fball_Andrea. That's FBALL_Andrea. Also, if you want to find all my columns and this podcast in one convenient place, you can give a like to my Facebook writer page. That's facebook.com/AHengstNFL.
And again, I'm Brian, and despite what Andrea says, we're actually co-hosts of this podcast.
Yeah.
She likes to tell everybody that she's the host. But in addition to co-hosting this podcast, I can be found on Twitter at BFAT65. That's at BFAT65.
All right, everybody. Well, enjoy whatever you might find enjoyable about all of these games. I know some of them are not going to be as exciting as others. But at the same time, remember, each team only gets 16 regular season games, and then it's all over until next September. So you might as well savor it while you can.
Don't be, even if your team's not doing bad, don't. Or not doing well, don't be too eager for the offseason to come back.
Yes, because then you're going to be...
Because you're just adding 3 months to the offseason. I mean, that's no fun.
That's no fun. All right, well, everybody, enjoy the games this week. And, of course, we'll be back next week, talk about Week 7, preview Week 8. Do all that stuff that we like to do here at the F-Ball NFL Podcast.
Later.
Peace.
No sacrifice, cause just being precise. With my hands on the wheel, while you play with the vice.